Well, we all know that respect is what you get when you listen to Warrior Connection. Everybody involved with the program is trying to get information, education out. I'm not sure what happened there. Are we okay?
Okay, I'm on.
Okay, well, hey, Denise, welcome.
Thank you, Doug.
Becky, are you with us?
Are you both clear?
Okay, great. Okay, hey, Denise, you got a lot of updates to do from Institute of Medicine meeting, don't you?
Yes, I do. I wanted to talk about that real quickly before we got started. The VA has contracted for another Institute of Medicine volume, which will be going through, again, on any, what they're looking for is any presumptives to be added. Now, the VA asked them to focus on neurological issues, Parkinson's, brain cancers, various other conditions. So kind of guiding them that that's what they want to see, if there's documentation, proof, and any research that will help the VA to decide to add to the presumptive list for Gulf War veterans. Now, the problem is each time that we've gotten an IOM committee started, it seems like we review the membership of who they choose from the National Academy of Science to be on an Institution of Medicine review panel. That is done by, you know, National Academy of Science, plugging in people to be members of that committee. And so, again, we've had a problem like we've had in the past of more of the people that we see as being members of these committees are of the psychological side of the picture instead of the true physical, hard neuro research and biomarker research that's being done. So the last time we did that, and Mr. Benz and members of the RAC that have served in the past on the RAC wrote a letter to the National Academy of Science and Institute of Medicine about this problem again, just like we had done on the last volume, which ended up recommending that it be called Gulf War Illness. And so they are looking at that. They've gotten a letter back, and after it was presented at their first open meeting, which the VA comes in, puts their charge to the IOM and reviews their report, which the VA reviewed the survey report they had out and was presented at the RAC in September. Looking at the figures from deployed and non-deployed. So they have since replied and said they are looking into that and that we will know, you know, come the next meeting in February or before that meeting in February of if they will alter membership like they did for the last time. So we went to the meeting, which was the first meeting. The Undersecretary of Health, Dr. Clancy, was there. Linda Schwartz, who is a Vietnam person, is now the new policy undersecretary or deputy, and she was introduced. The secretary wasn't able to come. Maybe he'll come the next time. I thought he would come on this one, and it's highly unusual that we get that level to come. But they did come. Except the secretary wasn't able to, be in two places at once. So we had Dr. Galum called in and Dr. Klimas called in and went through their material. They will also be presenting the next meeting. We're looking at the next meeting being sometime probably in the couple of weeks, first couple of weeks of February, which is also the time period the VA is looking at for the first RAC meeting to happen. So I did bring it up to both the VA and the IOM people that they needed to coordinate those meetings so that we have them at least all in the same week and not two separate times in VA for that in D.C. So hopefully they will coordinate, and hopefully we can have the open meeting for February for the IOM and the RAC meeting to, you know, be sequential over the same week. And if so, and even if not, I encourage Gulf War vets, their family members, please, it really counts to have your voice in person so they can see you. yes, we get call-in numbers where you can listen, and time allowing, they can take public comment from, you know, the phone lines. But it, you know, if you're going to try to help other vets, not only yourself, but help others, it is important for them to see the body and the person and how you're functioning. I don't care if you're in a wheelchair. We'll help you whatever way you can to get around if you're in a wheelchair and need additional help. But it is important. I mean, we're coming up on our 25-year anniversary, and it is so important that they see the vets in D.C. You know, if we're not seen, you know, you're not really being heard. A voice over the phone is not the same thing as them seeing you in person and you being there during a break, or get there a little early and talk to them in person. Go up and talk to the VA representatives. Talk to the IOM people that are on the committee. Let them know how you're doing, how others are doing that you personally know. It is so, so very, very important, and people, you know, have stopped going. We had a lot of participation in the mid-90s, and that helped. And I'm saying it again. It counts to be there, even if you can just make one meeting for the year. You know, it's important. And we have so many vets that if everybody just committed to making one of them, and, you know, we'd cover all the meetings and have a good representation of people there, speaking, talking to people, letting them know that this is serious, that you're having problems. I've encouraged also people to attend the town hall meetings. Right now they're doing the second round of town hall meetings. There's quite a few that were done last week, this week, next week, before Christmas. And I've put that up on the Gulf War Illnesses Facebook page and encourage people. We have to hit at the top, which is in D.C. We have to hit at the bottom, which is going to the town hall meetings in our local area. And what I tell them to bring up, if you go to the town hall meetings, bring up the problem with doctors knowing about Gulf War illness, their attitude of whether they're pushing you off. Bring up about our denial rate on our claims being 80% for Gulf War veterans presumptives. Bring up about the war-related illness on that page. I have loaded the flyers for the provider and for the veteran. Print those off and have them with you when you go to the town hall meeting and say, why do we still get these stupid looks from the doctors when we ask for a referral to go out to the war-related illness center? You know, and by speaking up, you're helping other veterans. You're not just speaking for yourself, you're speaking for others. And I once told you we needed an army to tackle this problem, Doug. And it becomes very hard to do this when only a few people are speaking up and keeping the pressure on them. We need vets at every level and their family members involved. Now, like I said, the RAT meeting with whoever they decide as new members will be taking place probably on the 1st of February. They haven't posted these dates to Federal Registry yet, but I've been told they'll be in the first part of February. The same thing with the Institute of Medicine. So they normally meet. The Institute of Medicine usually only has two meetings in the beginning that have open time for you to come and participate. And then they have a final open meeting when they finalize their report and put out their results. So you can see how important it is to get there and speak up, and for the Institute of Medicine, National Academy of Science people actually see Gulf War vets or their family members and hear from them in person. The RAC normally was meeting like once a quarter, so that's three times a year. We don't know if they'll continue that schedule or go to two times a year. You know, we're not sure until they get their new members situated and get started again in February. But it is so important to be engaged. If there's hearings up in D.C., we try to keep people notified. And if it's not directly related to Gulf War, you can watch it on, you know, live webinar from the committee hearings. You can communicate with them by email. We need to have that as a focus. I know that Representative Kaufman got reelected. I believe he's staying on the investigation subcommittee for the House VA committee. I, in fact, ended up on the same plane with him and Congressman Lamborn and Senator Bennett when I flew back out of D.C. So I had discussions with Kaufman right there and pushing the idea to have more hearings. I've talked to the committee staff on the House side about having hearings for our health care issues and for our benefits issues. All the hearings we've had recently in the recent past has been on the research and the RAC committee and on the problems there, which has been under the investigation oversight subcommittee for the VA Health Committee. So we really need them to look at having the other subcommittees involved, and that's what I'm hoping to get done this year, get an emphasis paid to it. We're 25 years after, and we have people that have died. We have people that are very sick. We have a claims problem when 80% of the claims are denied on the presumptives. You know, we have work to be done yet, people. And no one's going to do it for you. There is a small group, a very small group, that has been in this since the beginning. Anthony Hardy, myself, we're constantly up in D.C., okay, going to these meetings and speaking up. We have Mike Jarrett out of Virginia that's come up there, you know, that can drive in. There is a very big hole when you don't see more than five veterans at a hearing. And that's counting our veterans that are with the VVA, Vietnam Vets of America, or AMVETS. So I'm putting out the call. You want things straightened out? You get to that town hall meeting in your local state. Get there. Speak up. If you want change, you've got to make an appearance in D.C. We've got to have more people there, actual Gulf War vets that are struggling, that are getting denied, that aren't getting the help in health care and diagnosis. It doesn't change without a squeaky wheel syndrome. That's how we got the initial bills. That's how we got the initial reports from Senator Riegel and Rockefeller. We have lost that push. And after 9/11, it's like, you know, we were forgotten. Well, we're only forgotten because we've gone quiet. So there's the rally call, Doug.
You know, when I'm looking at all this stuff, and you just mentioned the Riegel Commission report, which is critical to all of us. And I don't know if you remember, Denise, we talked about it. Today is December 10th, and when we're pre-recording this, well, on December 10th of 1990 is when we had the discussion at Schwarzkopf headquarters about blowing everything up. And I'd like to read this directly because this is critical. This is on page 390 of Norman Schwarzkopf's autobiography, It Doesn't Take a Hero. 10 December, C plus 125, 1533 hours. Phone con with the chairman. The leaders entered into a conversation regarding attacking biological warfare storage plants with the sink, pointing out that General Horner assured him that when we attack the plants, we have selected munitions that will kill the bugs. The sink followed up this by reminding the chairman, if we do not attack these plants, we cannot guarantee that these agents won't be used on U.S. troops. That would be unforgivable sin. End quote. That's on page 390 of Schwarzkopf's autobiography, It Doesn't Take a Hero. Well, Denise, you remember you and I were with Chuck Horner 10 years after the fact, and we reminded him of that decision. And what happened is nothing got destroyed and everything got spread, and as a consequence, we have 1.5 million sick. And I mean, think this comes back down to the same thing with the Institute of Medicine. The previous investigations and hearings all tried to disregard the physiological effects and put it on psychological. And yet when we made that decision to destroy everything, and we have to remember, the U.S. Army, along with the other U.S. forces, provided Iraq all those chemical, biological munitions to use on the Iranians and the Iraqi Kurds, and they used them on us, and then they got all blown up, and now they found them in the desert again. So, I mean, that's history, isn't it, Denise? And so, I mean, what you're talking about is critical to get this all taken care of.
Yeah, it is critical. And, you know, our first hearing first hearing up there was November of 1993. Goes back many years. I helped get people there for the first hearing. In April of 94, we had the Institute of Health of Bethesda meeting on the health consequences of the Gulf War. There, I watched a pony, dog and pony show from the DOD, and I also saw that we had people educated, doctors, researchers come forward at that time, changed their schedules when they found out about it last minute, okay? And they made it. I met Dr. can't think of the names right now, but some of our people that deployed with us that were over in the Gulf. And they changed their schedules to get there. They spoke out. The National Academy of Science, NIH, there at Bethesda, was listening. Then in May, well, between the April meeting and the May Regal report, Rockefeller had his hearing, Senator Rockefeller's report, and he focused on the PB pills, the vaccines. Then we have Regal's hearing, May 24th, 1994. And let me tell you, we had people running in all directions, being sent up the rat mazes, as I call them. But we had investigations going on in the Hill. We had the OSAGWI, Special Office of Investigation, right under the DOD, start running around the country with town hall meetings. We got the Presidential Advisory Committee started, which was followed by the Oversight Committee for the Presidential Advisory. So, you know, we were doing our effort well in the 90s. We got our bills passed, 98, 2000, and then everybody just kind of, you know, let the IOM do their thing, not be there for the meetings, although the first IOM meetings, we had quite a few people come in, our doctors and our vets. But over the last years, since I would think the war started again in Iraq and 9/11 happened, it's like, you have to, I don't know what it takes to get the vets to know that you have to work all levels. You cannot just be concerned about your own health and your own claim. You need to speak up. It will affect your situation and so many thousands of others. And if we can't get more response from the veterans or their family members coming up and representing them and speaking to the issue, then we're kind of dead in the water, and we're going to die and not have changes happen. The last 2 days, there has been a panel concerned on the chronic fatigue civilian side. These people were out there with chronic fatigue and problems before we even came home sick from whatever exposures or whatever they got. They have organized. They have pushed. It seems like our paths are kind of similar. I got in touch with the civilians early on in 93 and learned from them and have tracked them. They track us. But they had a two-day meeting going on. It was live webinars. They have worked and gotten live webinars to cover their issue. We haven't gotten that yet. But I will tell you, watching those hearings that they have in their meetings, you learn from them of how to stand up and talk the issues and not moan and groan, but cover the issue. You're not just speaking for yourself. You're speaking for thousands, tens of thousands of others. So I have that link up on David Wynette's page, Gulf War Illnesses Facebook page. They are archiving that hearing. You can listen to it at night. It was a two-day meeting finishing today. Examining chronic fatigue. Dr. Klimas is speaking. Dr. Leah Steele spoke. Both of those came over from, you know, the civilian side of the house to help us Gulf War veterans because we have some similar complaints. Now, how they're different, we are still waiting for research studies that Georgetown has done looking at, you know, the similar items. Dr. Klimas has been very definitely involved in that. looking and caring for. First of all, she started in AIDS work and then went to civilian chronic fatigue and then realized we had a problem and got involved with us for Gulf War veterans and our illnesses. Leah Steele came up because she got funding from the state of Kansas to do an epidemiological study. She's now in Waco and trying to do research there with the Waco VA. Very, very informed. Wrote probably the first RAC report back in 04 that it wasn't stress. We have people that, you know, the only way they seem to get through is PTSD writing. Well, that was there in the beginning. The only way we could get compensation was if somebody claimed PTSD. We have the other presumptives. They're not handling it right. We need to speak out clearly that those are not being handled correctly as presumptions for Gulf War veterans. And we're hurt by those that, you know, may not be able to get their presumptive claim through, but will go claim PTSD, and they may not have PTSD. Okay?
Because the real problem, I mean, you know, even on my own team from the depleted uranium team during the desert or the depleted uranium project team, those guys are still needing medical care and denied medical care. Well, I'm going to change the focus right now because, you know, depleted uranium or uranium munitions and all this stuff came from uranium hexafluoride out of the Department of Energy. And they had made the decision many, many years ago when this first came up that not only they need to get rid of it, so they're going to make all the munitions, and there's a whole host of them, but they figured out, what else can we put into this stuff? And so they decided to make what's called DU-crete. And DU-crete is basically where they take the depleted uranium material, uranium hexafluoride, and they bind that into the concrete mix and use this in road crews. And with us today is Becky. Becky, are you there?
I am.
Well,
hi,
welcome,
Dad,
to Warrior Connection, Becky. Well,
thank
Denise
you.
And I have been working with Becky, and we met her some years ago when she came for help on this. And Becky, you're from a road crew. You're not in the military. You're a road crew, and you got affected by having all the same health effects that the Gulf War vets has. But you got it from working with DU-crete, didn't you?
Yes. Yes. And I worked here in the United States as a civilian, as a union laborer, and I worked from 1999 to 2003 until it took me down. Now, I did work sick for 2 years, like most of us do, and I think you, Doug, and Denise are still working sick, but you probably worked sick and didn't realize some of the symptoms, and now we know what those are. You know, we can go back and we can have our rest times and really analytically look back at what was really happening to our body as the DU was rotting within our body. I guess that's not the proper term. I guess the proper term is that it was bleeding its rust into us, and it's probably the right term. But
yeah, it's into a mess because what had happened is they formed DU-crete. In other words, they're taking the depleted uranium, and they're used as an aggregate in concrete. And so they had DU-crete, D-U-C-R-E-T-E, and DU-AG, D-U-A-G. And so
Yes. These
are two NERMs. Again, the Department of Energy came up with it. And where they first started doing the research on this is trying to develop casks for treatment transport of radiological materials and putting this into the concrete where it provides radiation shielding and everything else. Well, unfortunately, it provides a lot more. So then they go, wow, this stuff is incredible work. We can use this for roadbed materials. And that's where you got exposed. You were on a road crew in the state of Missouri, Becky?
Yes, I was. I was on a road crew in the state of Missouri.
And what was happening? How did you find out about this? What all transpired? Fill us in.
It's been a journey. It's been a big journey. It sounds like you guys understand the journey, so I'll try to explain it briefly for our listeners. In 2003, in September, I had what you call a explosion on the top of my head. It stopped at my heart, and as I, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. As it stopped, the impact stopped, it was a pretty heavy impact on top of my head. And when it all was over with, it felt like somebody had melted something very hot behind my left eye, and I didn't have any feelings in my legs. I was on the ground. And in November, I had a tumor removed, and I lost what that burning feeling was. I was losing my peripheral vision, and it was annihilating my peripheral vision at the moment. So I didn't understand any of it. Of course, I crawled to the phone and contacted my boss and let him know, like any worker would, I'm not making it in. I'm breathing. I'm talking, but something just happened, and I was working with APAC at the time, and I went on a journey of doctors telling me that I can't be seeing them anymore. This is political. I've had doctors throw my brain scan across the room and say, I can't tell you what this is. This is political, but you're going to die. And, you know, people, you know, when you have stuff like that told to you, you're scared. You're like, I don't want to hear this. I just want to go back to work. You get angry. You get angry with God. You're just like, what's happening? I am falling apart. And one evening had gone through a fast, and I said, Lord, I need some serious truth here. And that was 2010. And that morning, I kept seeing veterans on YouTube, kept going back. I was doing research on my hair analysis, which says what DU is in my body, the DU Creek. And every time I would do the research, it kept going back on the metals. It kept going back to YouTube with the veterans. And I'm going, okay, I'll watch this. But I didn't serve. What's going on? So I listened to a young lady talk about how she wasn't getting any benefits. And she read her hair analysis off, which is like Von Burnham to mine. And then she talked about how Dr. Doug helped and the other veterans had helped. And so I Googled Dr. Doug, and I contacted Dr. Doug that night. And then he gave me information that I went on a journey from there to investigate myself. Well, I was fortunate. I had spoke with you, Denise, and when I heard your voice, it reminded me so much of how I sounded when I worked. You know, it was firm to the point, but I needed another female to speak like that into my life. This is what you're going to have to do. And when you done that, it took. I didn't care how weak I was going to get, what was going to happen. It really took the fear factor out, and I knew that this was going to be a longevity run, that this was just the beginning of truth. There was going to be so much digging that this is going to get ugly. And the ugly was I found out that according to documents that's on the web, it's on OpenNet, and on human radiation experiments, on ionizing radiation, workers are still experimented on Department of Energy's depleted uranium hexafluoride program. Now, DU Creek is just one of those items. DAG is just one of those items. Munitions is just one of those items. It being in paint, Sherman Williams paint, DuPont paint, and in grout, you know, textile grout. So now it's in and steel yards. So all us middle class workers are still being violated, extremely violated, because I didn't sign no piece of paper that said you have a right to do this to me. They didn't. They violated my union rights and my federal rights as a worker, Department of Energy and Lockheed Martin. And they also violated the military workers that have been exposed, because there are corporations and organizations, and we won't get into all of that, but when any military identity calls himself a corporation or a company, and they're a part and affiliated with distributing and making money on depleted uranium hexafluoride, and that was where I went. I did the money trial. I've been in construction way too long, and they're making some money. These people at Lockheed Martin Department of Energy, they are making money. And, yes, there are senators involved. So what I've done is done a research who's associated with them, and I ain't talking to nobody that's associated with them as senators, congressmen. I'm talking to the other. Back to you.
I think the bad thing about this is when we finally got in contact and we started figuring out what it was and we realized that you were exposed to DU Crete, when you did get the radio bioassays down, you came back both on your hair analysis and everything, hot 4DU, uranium hexachloride, and depleted uranium, which I think, you know, was astonishing. But the other thing, too, and I mean the health effects on the vets, Denise and I have been working on this, and all of us are affected, and Denise sees this day in and day out in her work.
Yes.
Becky, you were, I mean, what the photos before you got sick, you were basically a model, even though you're on a road crew. And then the health effects have just had a devastating effect on your entire life, every which way but loose, haven't they?
Yeah, my sister put a photograph together before and after, you know, the effects of DU, well, and during. And I've got medical documents, and I want to mention what these are when you're ready, my health effects. But, yes, it has definitely damaged the bone structure in my face. And, of course, I breathe it in. So, according to Grove's memorandum in 1943, when they took the gases and they made it into dust, that's what they've done to us. They've absolutely exposed all middle-class workers, including vets, including union workers, any type of dust particle of the depleted uranium hexafluoride is that gas's changeover, and they made it dust. And that, by their own documents, this is a gaseous form, and it is a killing format, and it is meant to kill. And they put it in product, and they've made money about it, and they know what they're doing. There's no
they've
doubt.
Got to get rid of all this waste, because 99% of everything goes in the uranium enrichment process comes out as radioactive waste, and that's uranium hexafluoride, a gas which just processed into what we know as depleted uranium metal, DU metal. And I think, you know, we go back over the depleted does not mean that it's not radioactive. Depleted means only they remove 0.6% by mass of the fissionable isotopes out of the mixture. So you still have 234, 234, 235, 236, plutonium, neptunium, americium, and then obviously primarily uranium-238. So you are building roads. You're in a road crew, and they're using DU Crete on this road crew. So you're out there laying this DU Crete. You got the dust, the powder. You've got no respiratory protection. You got no skin protection.
Oh, no, not at all. And it's hot, you know, and so the paver's cooking. And even if the paver isn't cooking, the ground's cooking, because, you know, you normally lay it when it's warm outside. And I seen symptoms of people being sick before I got, you know, full symptoms, full-blown symptoms that I'll mention in the medical that I have. But it was strange to watch people drop around me, and the highest rate is heart attacks. I mean, they're dropping from heart attacks. And I look back at some of the little stories we, you know, people would say, oh, we think it's from this. You know, there was people that had been there for a minute, you know, for a couple years that knew something was taking them down that never had taken them down before. And that's because it was never fully implemented until the 90s. And it was completely patented by Lockheed Martin in 1997, if I'm correct, and anybody can Google it. Lockheed Martin is the patent holder on DU Crete. Or they can go to Department of Energy's website on depleted uranium hexafluoride and see the patent holders on DAG and on DU Crete. But I would see people have strokes, heart attacks. They were paver operators. They were people that flagged, they were people behind the paver, you know, various the people. Two of my supervisors within 6 months of my tumor being removed, they dropped one of them from a heart attack, and it impacted him so bad. And he was just 43, actually. he died, and the other one was 44, and he passed. He had a stroke, and my coworker next to me had full-blown body cancer. The thing of it is I was fortunate. I have a military OL. She's a veteran. I have a doctor that's a veteran, and she was the one that ordered my hair analysis. She's seen me falling apart, and we had known each other from years previous on, voting on issues of another type. And I was so fortunate that she recognized what was going on with me and did the hair analysis and put me on a pretty good protocol. And to this day, if I stray, I can't communicate like this at all, because the infection level gets so bad within the lymphatic system and around the brain, which they have now showed that I've got growth all the way around my brain, in my nasal and ears and behind my eyes. And they're growing. But without the protocol, and I'm on a lot of prescribed medicine, a lot of heart medicine, emphysema. They found uranium dislodged in the left lung. So if it's okay with you, Denise and Doug, I'll go through some of the health things. And then I wanted to have you guys confirm and share what you like to back. Is that all right?
Sure.
Okay. And this is important to me because the last couple years, what you were speaking about, Denise, is people getting involved, is if we can get the veterans that are sick involved and write proper diagnosis. There are doctors out there that are not diagnosing them right, and they're not doing hair analysis correctly. And that is so important, and it's not only important because the truth of what their health issues are, but because of their benefits. And it's important everybody gets their financial benefit. Okay. The documents that they even state, this is due from DU Crete and my history of working with it from 1999 to 2003. So the doctors do go ahead and state this. In 2012 to 2003, we're going to go back to that time, I lost peripheral vision in both eyes in 2003. Both eyes, burning pain, aching pain, vision blurry, left eye worse, pain scale from a 9 to 10, that's 2014. Generalized contraction in visual field. Now, some of these I'm not going to pronounce right, so you guys can correct me. Feel free. Scotoma, and that's S-C-O-T-O-M-A, constriction, eye explosions, mostly left eye. Tinted lids to protect the eyes from light. PT scan shows growth in and behind the eyes. Stomach pain, vomiting, head pain. 2004, 10 unit for pain and spine and pain management. Growth in sinus and behind both eyes, left larger. Brain scan that was done, that was in 2004. Growth, tumor in nose, ears, around the brain and behind eyes, brain scan 2014. Tumor removed in front of the heart area, 2004. Disabled due to chemical biotoxicity, 2005. 2012, heart attack. 2012, disabled due to depleted uranium exposure. Bronchitis, emphysema, COPD. Chest wall infection, CAD, coronary heart disease, vision change, left eye with discomfort and swelling, left side adrenal gland tumor, insomnia, muscle spasms, fibromyalgia, hypertension, palpitations, chest pain, chest tumor, breast tumor, sinus tumor, exposure to uranium, pulmonary emphysema, 2012. That was from the heart specialist. Okay. This is from University Hospitals. Shortness of breath. L-E-U-K-O-C-Y-T-O-S. That's difficult for me to pronounce. And this next one is E-O-S-I-N-O-P-H-I-L count raised in 2014. Now, I want to stop on that one real quick. The doctor from the cancer center, and I can't mention his name, brings up to me chronic myelogenous leukemia. And this you two probably are familiar with. This is a bone and lymphatic leukemia. And he mentions that DU exposure is like these people at when we used the Hiroshima bomb. Those children that were exposed to that at 5 years old died of this type of leukemia at 21.
Now, I think, Becky, what the whole key thing is, on a road crew, you've got all the ground concrete and everything, and all the dust and the dirt is being mixed and getting the wet format. So you're just having an incredible, incredible level of DU dust and everything coming right into your brain, bypass into your lungs and all over your body, so it's just a physiological effect. How old are you, Becky, by chance?
I'm 47. I'm only 47.
You were a young puppy when all this started. How did a female get onto a road crew to end up working and finding out that you work with DU Creed on Missouri highways? How did that happen? I would have thought that you would have been a beauty queen and, you know, something else, no. You know what I mean, leading into another work, professional, a nurse or a teacher or something. How did you end up in a road crew?
Well, I always had construction in my heart. It was it's beautiful to me. But I was the oldest and supposed to have been a boy. So that didn't work out. I was a girl. And then the church we attended, I was just blessed to have mentors that taught me carpentry. And from there on, I stayed in it. My first work was actually working residential at military bases and siding and roofing, and then I got into other forms of construction and learned it, and actually had a female teach me to do drywall, and was involved in owning my own business in that, and I went on and decided that there's no money in residential that I want, and I wanted to put some children to college, so I wanted to go ahead and go into industrial construction strictly. And so I took what experience I knew, and I did scaffolding and worked as a boilermaker through the winter months, and I worked as a union laborer on a road crew the rest of the year. And I actually enjoy construction, so it's no different than females being in the military. I put in 2 years in college, and I'm just, as far as being at a desk, I'm just not that type. I was never that type of person. I could flex back and forth, but to find out about the DU, of course, was that time I was, fasting, and I, in 2010, and I think I needed to have enough peace about me to not to absorb the truth of the Department of Energy depleted uranium hexafluoride program and to speak on it wisely. And absolutely, I've been on a journey from that. I went to, and it took a lot of courage to do. I could, like, then Denise said, there's sometimes you got to go. And when I went to Atlanta to see my doctor, my primary care doctor, and my heart specialist, I knew that my heart wasn't up for it. And I knew it would be fatal for me. And I did have a heart attack I didn't want to, but traveling isn't the best for most of us, I know, and now I have the heart meds that I need to be on, and Dr. Parikh, the heart specialist, had worked with uranium, and is, you know, he understands all that, and he was able to explain to me that the high beats per minute that I was experiencing, and my high beats per minute goes up to like 180, 79, 182, and it's just sporadic, and my heart can't take that. I have very low blood pressure normally, and he also explained that my muscle loss from the radiation exposure, and I'm continuing to lose muscle mass, was affecting my heart as well. And I've got two other issues that from the BU Creek that is affecting my heart. But he's got me on prescription meds as well as homeopathic meds and a way to eat. But as I traveled, I stayed at places that were very uncomfortable for me, and I got out of my zone and I stayed because I'm not on the level of prosperity. And so I stayed at a shelter there in Atlanta, and by doing so, I found out that, gosh, 40% of the people that stayed there were have been exposed to depleted uranium hexafluoride program. And some of them secretaries that worked for Lockheed Martin, some of them that worked with the Ballases, some of them, the majority, of course, were veterans. And others were electricians in the union. And then the worst of all of it was that you're... Man, sometimes you just got to cry. Your veterans that served during Desert Storm, and then they came back and got an industrial job and were exposed to the dust format of the DU and their work environment. And so whether it be grout or the concrete, the DU creek. So there are a lot of people out there sick. And they're not being treated properly. And, of course, Atlanta has been the only place I've ever gone that they had such alertness and awareness to DU. When I went to the emergency room, the doctor at the emergency room was so familiar with my hair analysis, he knew that it was DU. And it was wonderful working with those people. Now I get back here in Ohio, I'm in a political mess all over again. Where I've been searching for the last 3 months and been asked by my specialist, my eye specialist and spine specialist, to get with a military doctor that's familiar with depleted uranium or a doctor provided by Department of Energy that's a radiation specialist, I've gotten nowhere, and I've been contacting the headquarters, the Department of Energy in D.C., and come to find out it's one of the locations where they keep records on us workers that are being exposed to the depleted uranium hexafluoride program and human radiation program. And so I hope I said that right. Radiation. And of course they just asking me questions, getting information from me, but not giving me any answers. And come to find out where I've been going to Cleveland, and three specialists are not allowed to give me my information. Well, three specialist arenas, which is the breast cancer, then the pulmonologist, and then at the Cancer Center for Oncology, I have seen my file. But one of the surgeons is real clear, I don't have a file there. They don't have anything up to date, but yet we've got plenty of UH documentation. Come to find out, Department of Energy employees, since the beginning of the human radiation experiment, the scientists and doctors on this program also work for UH, and one of the very main scientists has been employed by them and on UH's board since, if I'm correct, the 60s, was in Chicago in the 50s. So it's ugly, and we do have to speak up for ourselves, and it's important that these truths come forth.
Now what has the, I mean, obviously you don't have the military background, or you don't have military medical care or the VA, so you got to get Social Security or whatever you can, or get through the union. Has the union or Social Security been responsive to your disabilities and everything, or are you still fighting that?
I have a workman's comp claim, and from what I understand, at this time, the Midwest union laborers are not cooperating producing the urine test, which, by the way, we get urine tests all the time. Either I would drive to a location and go give a urine sample, or they would come and we just go out like you would, like if you're hunting, you know, out in the woods, and give them a urine sample and they fill it up and take it back with them. My urine samples became back-to-back on a weekly basis. They were never any less than 2 weeks apart at the last. And when I worked for APAC. And my two unions are no longer, that was DeSoto and Springfield, Missouri unions. They're no longer available. So we have to go back to the Midwest, and that's in Springfield, Illinois. And we are subpoenaing them because they're not cooperating. And come to find out, there are some whistleblowers, I cannot mention their names, but they were a part of the DeSoto union. And they found that every concrete worker, and this would have been when we worked in the St. Louis area on Highway 55 area, and every asphalt worker, our urine was dirty with uranium.
Now, the question I have to ask, I mean, when you're I don't know anything about building roads or road crew or concrete work, but that dust just stay on the road, it's got to get into the civilian population that affected that area for several hundred yards out around the road when you're building. So my only question, Denise, I'm not even sure, maybe we need to look at this, are there health effects in the civilian population around the areas where these roads were being built and the DU-crete was laid down, the dust got out?
Well, I don't think the civilian population probably knows, okay? And that's the problem, is lack of knowledge, lack of information coverage by media. I'm going to encourage Becky to try to reach out to the media and get some stories, even locally, where you live, about the problem. And before we finish today, I just got the announcement on the next IOM meeting, which will be on Tuesday, January 27th from 1 to 4. And that will be at the National Academy of Science Building, room 125, 1 to 4 p.m. And this will be their last open meeting probably while they then go about their research and their committee work until the end of the study that they do, doing the research and seeing if there's anything to connect for presumptives. So January 27th, 1 to 4, National Academy of Science Building in D.C. That's on Constitution across from the Memorial, the Vietnam Veteran Wall. So I'm encouraging Becky, it'd be interesting to see you come. Doug, we need you. Other veterans and family members listening to the show that are suffering, we need you to get to this meeting. And I would anticipate that the Research Advisory Committee will probably be within, hopefully, that week. We'll see what happens, but they haven't announced yet. But January 27th, the Institute of Medicine has an open meeting, 1 to 4 p.m.
We'll put the basic papers up here on DU Crete on the website, and then you can contact Denise or I, or contact Progress Radio Network there, the producers, to get, and we'll get in contact with Becky if you need help. Becky, it's been an incredible journey. We're so sorry that it happened. You know, we've tried to get it out there. I mean, you've had a journey. You've been trying to help people, and basically you become the DU Crete expert. because you're suffering from it. And God bless you, Becky, and everything you've been doing. Denise, thank you. God bless you. I mean, you know, we have to think about this. One of the things, Denise, as we're looking at out, you know, the news today on Wednesday, on December 10th, is the Senate, the committee hearings came out on everything, on all of the torture and everything that's been going on. You know, and I've already been asked today on the media whether or not it was a good idea to release the poor report. And, you know, we got to be held to a higher standard. So we can't be doing evil things when we should be doing everything right, because when we do 99% of stuff right, the 2% we do wrong is going to come back to bite us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So any last word, Denise or Becky?
Go ahead, Denise.
Veterans or anybody affected, chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, IBS, Parkinson's, seizures, any of your neurological problems, you need to start speaking out. If you're a veteran, go to those town hall meetings and speak out. Know about the referral network for the war-related illness system. That's at Palo Alto, Orange, New Jersey, or D.C., depending where you live, is where you get a referral. And you must have a doctor's referral from the VA to get to it. If your doctors don't know about it, you join the page, Facebook page, Gulf War Illnesses. I have posted the flyers as a PDF form so that you can download it and print it any way you choose. There's also links on the VA website about the war-related illness centers and how you get a referral. And people, you need to utilize the system that's set up, and then we need to verbalize our concerns about how our care at local VA hospitals is not meeting the need, the doctors not being educated on Gulf War, the problems with our claims at an 80% denial rate. You need to take an active role and speak out, not only for yourself, but other veterans. So you need to get informed about the issue and be able to speak out proficiently, succinctly, briefly, and counter the problem locally, and then up in D.C., contact your new congressman, contact your senators, contact the VA committee at the House side and the Senate side, and tell them we've been dealing with this 25 years. It's time to get true action done so that our veterans get compensated for their illnesses correctly and get the health care they need. There is no cure, but there's ways to help you. Get on the Facebook page, Gulf War Illnesses on Facebook. That's where we do a lot of our work. And
thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen.